I'm going to start an apology for dragging you all inside. Sorry about that. Believe me, I know the outside too, but it is actually fascinating. And the next thing I'm going to do is just look at the title. And can you just turn to the person next to you, preferably from a different organisation, and say, what do you think I'm going to say? And this is the result that I was telling you about, how people rate their language. You see the difference between wave one, six months, and wave two, there's very little difference. Okay, so they're not reporting on this very blunt measure much progress. Well, we could probably speculate on some of the reasons why that might be true. Maybe you did. What's going on then? What do the data that we've collected tell us about the opportunities for speaking practice and people's development of speaking? What do our participants say about the speaking and listening that they do in the community? Okay, and the first one may not be any surprise. Certainly wasn't a surprise to me. Some of you may remember the longitudinal study we did in Victoria. Jill, Alan, I did in Victoria. Same thing came out of that. Speaking is very, very important. Many found speaking to be far harder than they thought. They weren't aware of the difficulties they would have with speaking before they arrived. And this is not just level one. This is level three, too. Very, very, very scary. And this last one again, which was no surprise to me, but it was throughout. They really don't get the opportunity to speak that would really help them develop their speaking skills. Now, was that a surprise to anybody?
No.
Okay. All right. So again, a couple of quotes. This student, in particular, thought that certainly speaking was something that they really needed to focus on. I think Alan was going to speak a little bit later about particular groups of students that may have more need to develop their speaking skills, partly because of the fact that they have had a very formal education They may have had a formal education in English that has not encouraged them to speak. It's encouraged them to do word exercises and learn words. And so they find speaking very difficult. And I think this particular participant will fall into that group. So that was at level one. Even at level three. This was a late 20s Spanish-speaking Colombian who had a couple of different jobs while she was with us in the project, and linking up with what Ingrid was saying earlier and other people, she found she was in a job and it was just a routine thing, and she was saying the routine stuff and she could do that. She was like a robot. She didn't it didn't expand her at all, and she felt that that's quite limiting. Okay, scary. Really, when you read what they're saying, it's a very traumatic experience coming here and learning English. An emotional experience. It's not just a logical thing. So that was at level two, and at level three. Okay, very panic. Yes, okay, and one of the things that's sad about this is obviously they've come to Australia. It's an enormous task. Everything's changing at once, and they almost blame themselves. They blame their own inadequacy for these feelings. Okay. So in a minute, I'm going to say what a wonderful safe place the AAP class was for them. But even then, it's a scary safe place. It's not impossible, it's just hard. Okay. Many of them did comment about how the AMEP was a safe place for them. They were quite emotionally attached to the AMEP. They felt it was somewhere that they could go and meet people, they could be safe, they could try things out. And I was talking to Vicky Hamming from NMIT in the break, because sometimes they also felt that they really could do with more speaking practice in a class. And I just mentioned Vicky because she's been thinking about the way of increasing speaking practice in class. Yeah. And she told me not to say any more because she's going to talk to you. She wanted it to be a surprise. Okay. One thing that we found that was quite, again, there's an emotional element to it. Many had very few social networks outside the AAP. So what we saw was a lot of social isolation, and again, at all levels, not just beginner levels. It was more extreme at lower levels, and I've put those references there because all of these authors have explored the phenomenon that you need language in order to engage people in talk, which involves language, which improves your language, and it's all very cyclical. And obviously, our participants, I think, felt it at all levels, but it's particularly acute at the lower levels. So many of them didn't talk to anybody much at all outside the AAP, in English, certainly. For many, it was the only social contact in English, or through English. And that's a bit scary. And so some of these are notes from our observations rather than direct quotes. And I'm just giving you an indication of who said that. So these are participants. Sydney and Melbourne. Decoding. So, I'm stating now the obvious, they have little opportunity to practice English. And this part is going to point out, when they do go out, they actually only use very basic English, and it often doesn't expand what they can do very much. Okay, so the AUP is obviously crucial for them for all of these reasons. And one of the things I got very clearly, one of the senses I got very clearly from the data is that the AUP is not just a place to learn English. Again, I'm stating the obvious, and you all know this, but it was very clear talking to the participants. It's a safe place for them to try things out. They can get social support there in a way that they're not necessarily experiencing outside. They make friends there. And those friends are useful and in many cases endure after they've left the AMEP. And it's a very, very important source of information. Not only the official information that you hand out in your class or that your professionals hand out, but where they find out from each other what other people have found out. But after the AUP, these social networks sometimes break down. And we had many cases of people saying, oh, after I've left the AUP, I think, you know, my English isn't so good. Because we have got a lot of people in that 22 to 44 age group, quite a few of them did have babies. Does have an impact, I think, on who you speak to. Okay, so I've just probably told you something that you already know. Is there anything we can do about that? What can we do about that? One thing we noticed when we were looking at what they said about speaking and listening is that they seem to have very little awareness of language learning strategies, of any strategies they could use to deliberately develop their speaking and listening. So we looked at the data again to see what kinds of strategies they used. We found they used very few either inside or outside the AMEP, and they didn't talk much at all about using strategies to improve their learning or extend their social contact. Or generally get more communicative competence. But obviously, strategy is an important way in which a learner can improve their independence in language learning. Okay, so what strategies did we see them using or hear them using? And we looked at how they talk about their speaking and listening, and how conscious they seem to be, or unconscious, of how strategies could help them, and what kinds of strategies we saw evidence of. And the first thing to say was, as I said, they didn't use many. There wasn't much evidence that they were using strategies. Certainly outside the AUP, they use more inside. And while more educated learners, there was evidence that more educated learners might use strategies slightly more than less well educated learners, it was by no means a clear cut thing. And just because you were well educated didn't mean to say you had the strategies or you were using the strategies. There was no obvious pattern for any of the groups we looked at, you know, language background or age or gender. But what we did notice is that people who talked about using strategies to enhance their speaking inside the AMEP also tended to be the ones who used them outside, when they were outside in the community. Okay, just a little bit of theory there. There are different types of strategies. If you look at the literature, different types of language learning strategies. socio-effective ones that deal with the interpersonal type strategies, cognitive ones where it's focused on cognitive processes, metacognitive strategies where learners take a sort of a larger, take a step back and take a larger view of managing their learning, and memory. Okay, spot of reflection. What do you think they might use the most in speaking and listening? We now bear in mind this isn't a survey. We didn't ask them what strategies. We just looked for evidence of them talking about different strategies. Okay, and the answer is. The answer is? No strategy at all. followed by socio-effective strategies. So strategies involving talking to people. And as you can see in the blue, it's the strategy where they talk about using strategies inside the AEP and the dark red outside. And they don't talk much about their strategies. They might use them as people to talk about them, or they may not be aware of them. But I thought that was an interesting thing in itself. Okay, and this graph simply shows that the people who use the strategies, who talk about using strategies in the AMP, also tended to be those who use strategies outside the AMP. And they're in quite a large number of people. I don't talk about it. Okay, so they don't use strategies very much, very consistently. When they do, it tends to be social strategies, and they seem to be largely unconscious and social rather than specifically language learning oriented. While education might encourage, somebody who's well educated might be slightly more likely to use strategies, it's by no means a done deal. And this left me reflecting on, well, can we increase the active use of strategies? Would that be helpful? Can we increase perhaps the range of strategies? They're not just looking at social strategies, but broadening the types of strategies that they use. Can we make them more aware and conscious of strategies to improve their speaking and listening? Okay, so I just thought I'd give you a couple of examples of what I'm talking about. This was a 31 learner who showed very little evidence of strategy use right across the study. So in quarter one, when we interviewed her, this is what she said. In quarter two, and in quarter four. Okay, so she hasn't somehow got a handle on or how she can stop the world and get something out of it for her speaking. In contrast, okay, so this is an Arabic background student. Those of you who taught classes of Arabic background students may have found them quite lively. This person is capitalizing on that communicativeness. But interestingly, to begin with, this natural, habitual communicativeness changes. While he's in the AEP, the AEP helps him slow down and become more analytical, so he's actually changing his strategies from being a less self-conscious communicator to actually becoming more self-conscious becoming more reflective on his language learning. And outside, he's got a job. And in this case, this particular learner, and I think for quite a few of them, having a job does help to increase their confidence. It may not improve their grammar or vocabulary, but it sometimes helps increase their confidence. And he always seeks out opportunities. So his use of strategies changes, and he's making them work for him a little bit. So, teachers do teach strategies. We had some materials on strategies in our collection, but not a huge amount, I must say. But there was evidence that teachers were teaching the strategies. And here's a couple of examples. I don't know if you use any materials like this. Some of you do. What kinds of strategies were people using? Well, in one, I've given you a few examples there of the strategies that we that our participants told us about using at different levels. I particularly like maybe our first one, specifically at level 3. But you know, it's a strategy. You didn't have to join the hugging club. So they're kind of quite simple things that learners could be encouraged to do, and perhaps they just haven't thought about those things as a strategy, and a little nudge might be helpful. So we just wondered why there aren't more participants using strategies to help speaking listen. So these are the questions that occurred to me as a result of that. Good strategy user becoming a model for a less independent strategy user? What can we do to help? However, I am very mindful of what Henry was saying earlier. The AMP can't do everything. And it's not the AMP fault that people can't find lots of speaking practice outside the classroom. So I thought I just wanted to show you this. It's from, I went to Metropolis Conference in Copenhagen, and they took us down to show us what the city of Copenhagen has been doing to help settlements. And they have a number of strategies, and this is one of them. And just in case you're Danish, it's a little rusty. This is what it is. It's a notice that is designed to be put up in workplaces to give ordinary citizens advice on the strategies they can use to speak to people who might be learning the language. Because communication, you know, is a two-way process. It's not the learner's fault that they're learning. And ordinary people don't know what it feels like to be in the other place. They don't know what they have to do to make it easier, and they get scared and they give up. And that's exactly what they shouldn't be doing. So something like this, I think, is also a very useful initiative in thinking about speaking and listening. I think that's good advice for everybody, actually. Okay, and just thank you to everybody who's worked together on the project.